This is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast episode number 178. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. This episode is an interview with Paul D. Schrader, titled San Bernardino County's Sheriff in Exile, and is being released on Sunday, September 29, 2013. This interview with Paul was recorded on Tuesday, September 24, 2013. In 2010, Paul sought the office of sheriff in San Bernardino County. Despite being significantly outspent 25-1 by the established politician who was appointed as sheriff in 2009, he placed second in the election of three candidates. Paul earned the endorsements of numerous associations, California chiefs, and other dignitaries. And I should also point out that after the election, the appointed sheriff, Hoops, stepped down and appointed another sheriff, John McMahon, both unlawful sheriffs, in an act of voter fraud to keep Paul out. Paul Schrader has 30 years of experience in city, county, and federal law enforcement. Paul currently works as a deputy sheriff bonus one at the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. After graduating from high school, he enlisted in the United States Marine Corps. Paul was sent to San Diego, California for boot camp. After training, he was sent to 1st Marines as an infantryman. After 2 years, he went to the military police and was then assigned to work as an undercover narcotics operative at the Naval Investigative Intelligence Service, NCIS. And Paul and I do talk about the war on drugs on here, and he is against medical marijuana law, well, against the attack on medical marijuana dispensaries and things like that here in California. Anyway, Paul continued his career for the next 26 years working in city, county, and federal law enforcement. Paul claims he has the necessary hands-on experience by being selected for several important assignments. These assignments have given Paul the skills essential to overseeing a large and active sheriff's department and in helping to develop trust and cooperation with the community, which Paul considers essential. His law enforcement management skills include jail supervision, logistics team member, risk analysis team supervision, and patrol and legal unit supervision. Paul has served as an audit team supervisor, giving him a clear understanding of how to most effectively use the Sheriff's Department budget to benefit the community and deputies. Paul also has an excellent community and intra-agency skills. He has served as supervisor in the Film and Media Relations Department and was selected to sit on a merger team panel to facilitate the merger of two law enforcement agencies. Paul has received several awards in the course of his career, including the Meritorious Service Award, the Chief's Service Award, and the Unit Commander's Award. Paul and his wife, Judy, have 5 homeschooled daughters. And more can be found on Paul Schrader at his page on Facebook, which is Sheriff Schrader, and also Paul D. Schrader. And you can also look him up at sheriffpaul2014.com and also sheriffpaul.wordpress.com. And we'll also be discussing oathkeepers.org and some other goodies in this episode. And donations. This episode is brought to you by Timothy, Paul, Alan, Jeffrey, Ulf, Sam, Deb, and Tom. And thanks to all of you for making this episode possible. And of course, we do our best to provide just about everything here for free, so your donations and website purchases are greatly appreciated and essential to keep the information coming out to all of you. This show runs on donations and our website sales. This is not corporate media, but independent media in the truest sense of the words. And the new Gnostic Media Wheat Blows bumper stickers are up on the Gnostic Media website. And, of course, the bookmarks are still up there. And the first 4 years of the Gnostic Media podcast are up there. She Who Remembers Audio Archives, a couple of my books, and John Allegro's Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. There's t-shirts up on the Cafe Press page. All of that helps to keep this show going. And lastly but not least, the views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. The website is www.gnosticmedia.com. That's GNOSTICmedia.com. You can reach me directly at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thanks for listening and thank you for your support. Here is my interview with Sheriff Paul, San Bernardino County's Sheriff in Exile. Enjoy. All right. Paul, welcome to the Gnostic Media Podcast, and it's really good to have you with us. We're actually here at your home, so we're with you this time. But we've been discussing a lot about the sheriff and law, natural law, why the sheriff is the supreme law of the land on the show over the last several months with people like Freeman Burt and others who've done a lot of research in this area. And basically, a lot of the questions that I'm going to be asking you today are from the men or from the people who practice natural law and don't want to harm others or the property and don't want harm done to them. So, and especially in regards to the corruption of law and government, etc., and acting under the color of law. So, to start out, why don't you introduce yourself and tell the audience a little bit about Paul Schrader and your background and that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, my name is Paul Schrader, and I'm running for a second time in San Bernardino County for sheriff. A little bit about my background. I grew up in Arkansas, and the Marine Corps brought me out to California. I was in the Marines, and I started off my law enforcement career in Naval Investigative Intelligence Service. And right now I have 30 years as a peace officer. I'm currently working for one of the biggest sheriff's departments in the United States. My background includes patrol, investigations. I have probably about 15 years of extensive administrative work in risk management, standards and compliance, things of this nature. And also supervising a legal unit. And one thing I think that this is very important is the sheriff's department to me is a business, and it should be run as spending the money and using resources within the sheriff's department. I think you need someone that's going to make sure that the money and whatever you're using, your resources, is being used basically just like a household budget. You're not overspending and you're not utilizing assets that you don't have and trying to borrow money and use money that you don't have. I've owned three businesses during the time that I've been in law enforcement, so the businesses were part-time. I can also, meet with small business owners and understand the plight of trying to make payroll, working with people in the business community. The last business I started, I started a business from scratch, and within 2 years it was a multi-million dollar corporation, which I ended up selling. But I do have a business background to support running an organization such as San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department. Where I work now, at one point, my team, and I was a supervisor at this team, we were actually called upon to try to locate savings of about $70 million to cut from the budget. And it took us about 2 weeks, but we did, and no one lost their job. And I think someone with that type of background is what you need, to basically run a business. And I've been married to my wife, Judy, for 25 years, and we've got five children, all girls, aging from 10 to 19, and we've homeschooled all of our kids. We think that it's the right thing to do. I kind of consider public school government indoctrination, and they did, some of them had a little bit of a taste of that, and we pulled them out, and now my oldest, she's going to college now, and she's basically has the ground set though, where she understands what's right and wrong and what's being taught in the schools. So she's in her second year, but in her first year, what really came home to me was a lot of things the teachers would say, she would stand up and basically dispute some of the false information they were putting out. So that's pretty much quickly, in a nutshell, my background. I think that, being a sheriff, I tell people, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. You need to be able to make good, common sense decisions. And, you're running a business and you're making sure you're giving the proper product to the people that you're working for. So that's the way I look at it.
When you think of the Western film High Noon, what comes to mind?
Well, the old-timey sheriff that's, basically, out with the people. I always consider that type of... People know who the sheriff is, and people know the sheriff. He knows his community, and that's what I always look at. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to know our community.
On another part of that, he is also trying to, as the supreme law of the land, he's trying to round up the posse to protect the town from the invading gang of gunslingers, and he can't get anyone in the town to back him now.
The judge has left town, Harvey's quit, and I'm having trouble getting deputies.
People got to talk themselves into law and order before they do anything about it. Maybe because down deep they don't care. They just don't care.
Essentially, the point that I see in that film and that other people pointed out to me is that really the sheriff and the people are married.
Right.
And without the people, the sheriff really can't do anything, because if the sheriff, and we'll get into this later, but if the sheriff needs to call the posse or anything to protect the community, if the community doesn't help out in that, then it's to the community's own detriment.
Right.
So, and that brings to mind, going from the 50s romanticizing of the sheriff and everything, you get into the 70s films like Smokey and the Bandit or maybe Dukes of Hazzard, and how they portray the sheriffs in these films. And I think that at that point, it's almost as if there is an intentional turning about the information that they wanted, how they wanted to portray sheriffs, trying to make the local sheriff look like the bumbling fool in the media. Would you agree with that sort of thing?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And in my opinion, I couldn't think of any other position out there, and you say it's just common sense, but I can't think of any other position out there, knowing what I know about the position of the sheriff and natural law and all of these things, that could possibly, another position that could possibly have any more responsibility involved in it than the position of sheriff. So would you agree with that, number one? Number two, why would you want to be a sheriff, and what drives you to be a sheriff?
Well, I do agree with you. The sheriff is the, in his county, he is the highest law enforcement officer in his county. And I think it's equivalent to the president.
Well, if the president is in San Bernardino County, you're above the president.
Absolutely. He has... I'm a 10th Amendment guy. I believe in states' rights, and I believe that I have, because I was elected as sheriff in this county, and, he is the president of the United States. I feel that I would have jurisdiction here that he doesn't. So
absolutely.
So I do agree with that. And what was your other question? I'm sorry.
Well, just what would drive you to want to be a sheriff, essentially? What's behind that? Obviously some people would say that you have control issue problems, or, there's all kinds of ad hominem attacks, et cetera, that they can throw at you. So let's hear it from you directly. What makes you want to be a sheriff?
Well, I've been a peace officer for 30 years. And what I look at in this county is I think that we have a culture of corruption in this county. And I say that because I believe that. And I believe that it's going to take people that believe in the Constitution and believe in doing what's right to start stepping up and running for these positions and getting people that are like-minded to support people like me. We have people from every, it's a nonpartisan position, but we have people from every political background that find something of interest that I believe in, because I am a nonpartisan person. But for me, it's going out there and doing what's right, support and defend the people here from the tyranny of the federal government. And I believe that, along with the Second Amendment, is where that falls in place. Because people will.
Is that not the, you know, and we'll get into more of that in a minute, but isn't that really the supreme job of the sheriff, is to protect people from the federal government?
Well, I believe that, you know, and I believe it too. I mean, you can't leave out, that is, but also to, you know, help fight crime. You know?
Right. Right, exactly. Now, real crime, and we'll get into that in a moment also, but so, to you, what is a sheriff?
Well, I consider myself, you know, I will throw the word law enforcement officer out there, but I'm a peace officer. I believe I'm here to, you're talking about the function, right? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm asking you what it is to you.
To me, the function is to keep the peace, to protect the community from tyranny from the federal government, to work within the criminal justice system, the courts, civil process, and that's kind of it. It's pretty much to me, I believe the sheriff has a responsibility to go into any section. I don't care if it's a politician, I don't care what it is, but if there is crime being committed, and this is what really bothers me, if there's crime being committed and it's in a politician or something like that, we never really see the sheriff doing anything, and I believe
right.
That's part of what needs to happen.
And that's exactly what the sheriff's job is.
Yes.
And I'm glad that you brought that up, because you know, a second ago you said to protect the people from the federal government, but it's not just that, it's to protect the people from the local governments.
Absolutely.
As well. And then the people essentially count on you. You know, the sheriff really should be, I mean, everybody should be coming over here and sitting next to you in your house and saying, you know, excuse me for saying that, now everybody's going to be like, hey, Paul, can we come over for dinner? I want to meet you. But, you know, people, you know, really need to get to know the sheriff, because it is the sheriff and the people in that marriage together that keep things working. Now, this week, 7 counties up in Northern California plus Southern Oregon formed together and told the feds to get out. And then this week we also had a Nevada sheriff threaten SWAT team against the feds. What do you think about that?
I absolutely agree with him. I mean, Lopi and Gene Wilson, they're some of my mentors. There are a couple of the constitutional sheriffs that are actually in the state of California. And I met them at the California, or the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association meeting.
That's a mouthful.
Yes, and that group is put on by Sheriff Mack. Sheriff Mack has actually endorsed my candidacy, and he's also another mentor. And I believe what they did is right. I think that, you know, federal government overstepping its bounds, they have no business coming in my county and running roughshod over the people. And, you know, people say, well, how are you going to do that? How does that work? You tell them they're not allowed in my county.
Right. And if they, essentially, you know, you are the head of the militia,
yes.
You are the head of the posse. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, if they want to bring the army in here illegally, then the sheriff has the right to call his own army, doesn't he?
Yes. Now, we have people who talk to me about the militia, and I can't remember how you probably have your format set up, but just since you mentioned the militia.
Sure.
We have people in this county, and, you know, to me, a militia is anyone that wants to join. That's,
right.
You know, an able-bodied citizen of this county. But we actually have standing militias in this county that really don't do anything with the sheriff's department. They just call themselves a militia. I've already met with these people, and I told them once I'm elected that we can work together.
Right.
And I would love to, You know, I said, I'm not going to tell you that you need to come train with us, but I would love for you to be part of that.
Well, I mean, they should be trained. I mean, that's what the militia is that they are constitutionally required to really help the sheriff
right.
back in a fight right. against tyranny. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the militia, is to be there to back the sheriff.
Can you imagine in New Orleans, whenever they had, what's that called, martial law?
Right.
If the sheriff there would have said, we don't need martial law, I have my militia, I have my deputies, I have this.
It would have been totally different.
It would have been totally different. You wouldn't have seen the old lady getting knocked down and her 22 pistol pulled out of her hand by a bunch of thug cops. And I'm telling you, that really ticked me off, because they had martial law and are taking guns from people. That will never happen in this county as long as I'm sheriff. That will never, ever happen. So, I mean, that kind of stuff is just, it's crazy.
Now, San Bernardino County is the largest county in the country. It's larger than 9 states, larger than the 4 smallest states put together, and larger than 71 sovereign nations or countries. Does that make you take pause or anything of that sort?
Yeah, it makes me say, ouch, because I've been all over this county, and sometimes it's grueling, because when you're campaigning, you're going sometimes from Chino Hills
all the way
to Needles or to Barstow. Like a few nights ago, I was in right. Barstow. And it's you know, what I think about, there's a lot of sand out here, too. I mean, it's a, you know, you got 22,000 square miles, but you got a lot of sand. And we got about 2 million people in this county. And what's really eye-opening is we have about 900,000 registered voters. The last election, 170,000 people. That's it. So, you know, it's sometimes you wonder why people don't get out and vote, and it kind of breaks your heart, because, I mean, in the last election, I only ran 5 months, and we were all over this county. I can tell you, I've been in every city in this county several times. I've got friends. We've got people in every city. We have volunteer coordinators, and we have volunteers. So, yeah, this is an enormous county, and I've seen it.
So you ran for sheriff in 2010,
mm-hmm.
but the incumbent sheriff, Hoops, after he won the election, stepped down,
mm-hmm.
and then they selected John McMahon as sheriff. And in your opinion, was this move intentional to keep you out?
Oh, yeah. I truly believe that, because this is what I asked. I took about 100 supporters in there. I filled the chambers with supporters. And we did this 3 times, and they discussed what they were going to do. And we asked them, let's either have a special election, or let's take the person who came in second place in the election of the person who still has 2 years left. Let's do that. Let's do the right thing. Well, they said they were going to do the right thing, and they appointed someone who was already, who the guy that was leaving, who was appointed, said, I would like this guy, McMahon, to take my spot. So the Board of Supervisors did exactly what he asked. They appointed
him. And, of course, they probably had an agreement with him beforehand that he was supposed to side with McMahon
yeah.
in the first place. So would you say that the county officials and Board of Supervisors committed election and voter fraud?
I truly believe that, and I truly believe that one of the main reasons they did it, and the lady that is she was the chair of the Board of Supervisors at that time, Josie Gonzalez, made a statement that we want to make sure that whoever we appoint will do what we ask them to do. And they know that I will not do what they ask me to do unless it's something legal and something that we need to do to better the county.
So you're actually the sheriff du jour, sheriff in exile.
I guess you could say that, yes.
So, but legally speaking, as far as most of the county is concerned, you're the real sheriff, is that correct?
A lot of people, they call me Sheriff Paul, and they...
right.
I had a guy actually come on one of the websites and say, you know, you're a liar, you can't call yourself that. And I said, well, you know, I received more votes than this guy, and I'm not calling myself that.
They're calling you that.
The public call me that.
And the public can call you whatever they want, and if they voted for you, and I mean, you know, right now, an appointed sheriff is an unlawful sheriff. He has no right to be there. And the issue is if the if the county board of supervisors is committing a fraud, and then you get in there, well, then obviously your first duty once you get in there is to arrest them for voter fraud.
That would be a great thing. I think that we would have to have an investigation and say that
We need a grand jury investigation,
and let the grand jury make that decision. I think that would be perfect because I'd have no problem doing something like that.
So why do you think they're blocking you from being a sheriff? What are they afraid of?
I believe they're really afraid of someone that they can't control, because I remember after Sheriff Hoops was appointed, he personally told me he felt beholden because he would call me when we were running, and he would ask me to take it easy on him on certain subjects. Because, yeah, I know it's kind of weird, but he would say, can you take it easy on me? I'm like, well, you know what? If you change the way you're doing things, I would, if you would stop doing this, I would stop talking about it. But anyway, he told me he felt beholden to the Board of Supervisors.
Isn't he sworn to the people and not the Board of Supervisors?
Yes.
And what's his real job here? So he committed a fraud too against the public, because one, he wasn't doing his job. Two, he basically gave a tap off to McMahon for the position that you rightfully had. Three, he went along with this idea that the county didn't have enough money to hold a referendum. I think they claim that they needed $3.5 million to hold a referendum for sheriff. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into this more later on in the interview, but we've already located over $3 billion that the county has hidden in funds, and there is well enough that they can use for referendums and things like that. So, why have they appointed sheriffs in the Tri-County area?
Control.
Control of the people?
Control of the people, control of the sheriff. Things, as long as they have people making suggestions of who should be the next sheriff and things of that nature, things are going to stay status quo. It's very, very bad politics is what it is. It's politics, probably politics at its best.
Sure. And this being one of the largest, richest, most population-dense regions in the world.
Yes. Yes. And so what happens is if they appoint McMahon, then whenever it comes time for election, people look at him that are already in the system and things of this nature as the sheriff, and then the money would come to him. So when it comes time to run, just in this county, to put information in a voter's guide that you take with you to vote, or you get it before you get your absentee ballot, it's $32,000. Now, I'm a grassroots guy. I think I've got $15,000 in my war chest. But as soon as he was appointed, people started giving him money. Now, they haven't given him that much money because he's not doing a good job, even though he was appointed and he's playing the game. Something's happening. For some reason, he's not getting the money that you would see in a normal situation. He's been sued already as sheriff, and they paid out $1 million to a guy that he fired for helping.
I saw that.
Yeah, helping take care of his sick mother, and so this guy's making some very bad tactical moves that I'm not going to forget, and the people aren't going to forget. And there was a guy that hung himself in a jail. A nurse tried to cut him down. They wouldn't let the nurse into the cell. She whistle blew. And they fired her. Now she's got her job back, and she's got a payout. They gave her another payout. So,
well, that leads right into my next question, which was, what has been the consequence to the people of having an unlawful sheriff in your position?
There you go. I mean, you've got someone that I believe should have never been sheriff. To me, the reasons that they said they appointed him as sheriff is because he was a good guy. People liked him. They talked to the executives at the sheriff's department. He's a hard worker. He's this. He's that.
Well, the reason why you have an appointed sheriff, we all know, is because they're in order to.
Yeah. He's been there 27 years. He can't hang his hat on anything that says, wow, we were having a problem here. I did this. They had three people escape from the jail whenever he was the deputy chief and over corrections. And one of those people got out, shot a deputy in L.A., and then killed a person up north. He was in charge of these jails. Now, the three that they had escaped within a month or two period. You would think that, oh, wow, we had escaped. Maybe we need to change the way we're doing business there. When you see a guy do stuff like that and do things like he's doing now, there's no way he should have ever been sheriff. And then again, you know, just because he was a deputy chief means nothing. That means absolutely nothing, because if you have the good old boy system where we're bringing up our buddies and putting them in spots, you know, I call what happened to him is when he got the appointment, it's just welfare. I'm giving you something for nothing.
Sure.
You didn't earn it. You didn't go out here and get the people to elect you. You got handed something. So what? Guess what? Why should you do anything?
Well, why should anybody listen to him if he's an unlawful sheriff anyway?
Exactly. I agree. I think.
I mean, all the deputies of this county would have to do is swear their allegiance to you, and that's the end of the story.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they're very afraid, because another thing this county does is a lot of the deputies are very afraid because of the punishment system that happens out here. If they so much as cross or say anything against the sheriff, they work down here in Rancho Cucamonga, they could end up in Barstow.
What about you? Have you been threatened?
Oh, absolutely not.
No?
No.
Are they going to harass me for daring to interview you?
Who knows? You never know. I mean, we've had some bizarre stuff happen to some of the people that have worked on my staff, that work on my staff, and some of the people that, those people that work on my staff have had different things happen to them.
And you had told me one instance, a guy was roughed up by the sheriff, by the deputies, and he thought it was because he was helping you.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, we've already discussed a lot of these points, but what, in your opinion, are the duties of a sheriff?
Again, to protect the citizens from the tyranny of the federal government, local government, to serve civil process, to keep the jails, versus the people in the county.
Now, let's talk about the Oath Keepers for a moment. You mentioned Sheriff Mack a few minutes ago. The Oath Keepers is obviously a large group of sheriffs and law enforcement officers that have sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Yeah. I'm an Oath Keeper, and the Oath Keepers are, they're really not a bunch of cops and people. They're actually more business people and ex-military and things of that nature. What they do is they try to get the police and military to uphold their oath and to not act on illegal orders. And they give them, the Bill of Rights and things of that nature and say, please uphold your oath. And what they want is they want people that will uphold their oath. And if someone gets in trouble for upholding their oath, they will support them and back them and try to go to bat for them. So,
now, the Oath Keepers is a 501c3 organization, but they're bound to the Corporation of Washington, D.C. by having that 501c3, and so cannot be really about informing the... the show cannot be about informing the public about constitutional Magna Carta rule of sheriffs, mm-hmm. if that is their intention through that organization. What do you say about that?
I'm not really sure.
Let me ask you this then. Would you be willing to swear an oath to the people directly and not just to the Constitution regarding your protection of the people
absolutely.
And the land that they're on?
Yes, absolutely. I have no problem with that. I think that something like it should be incorporated into the oath. So,
now, what do you have to say about federal jurisdiction and its not so well known jurisdiction of 10 miles around Washington, D.C., and what will you do to help protect the people from this far overextension of government authority?
Well, that's a good question, because Now, you know, I've had people tell me about the 10-mile radius and where the federal government stops and where it begins. The main thing that I look at is, in my county, I do not want the federal government coming in here enforcing laws. And as the sheriff, I will be asking them not to. Now, if they have a court order, that's a different story. I will abide by the court order.
And that gets into a whole thing of the federal courts, et cetera, and who really has jurisdiction, because you, and we, you know, we can, that would be a whole other topic,
yes,
really, but you, with the court of record and the court clerk, have supreme power, regardless of what the feds say. And if, you know, let's say if it's something like medical marijuana, the people have made their,
yes,
statement very clear. The feds have an illegal war on drugs where they ignore the people's vote, mm-hmm, time and time again. They drop some trumped up charges to go after some, you know, small time grower or whatever here,
yes,
in California. You know, would you step in between that and say enough is enough? You're not allowed in,
yes,
here?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I met with the co-ops up in Victorville. A group of them got together. Apparently they have meetings, and they asked me to come up to speak to them. And I'm the only candidate for sheriff or anything that's ever spoke to the group, because I told them I would protect their rights as long as they're abiding by the law. You know,
sure.
I said, you know, you're selling something you're not supposed to be selling, then you're going to deal with me. But I said, if you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing, I will protect your rights. And I said, you know, the federal government will not be coming in here, you know, violating your rights and shutting you down.
Now, as a sheriff, would you allow federal funds to fund your project?
Well, I know where you're going with that, because once you take federal funds, then they're going to want to control. As long as that money comes with no, if they want to give me money, because I think we sent the money there to them. And
what if we just didn't send it there to them in the first place?
Well, that would be, I think that would be the best thing, because it's like the DUI roadblocks. Those are federally funded. I do not believe in the DUI roadblocks, and I would not take a dime of that money. If they want to give me that money and say, do what you want with it, I'll take it. So I would take
no strings attached.
I would take federal money all day long as I can do what I want with it. Don't tell me that I'm going to have to enforce some kind of program,
right,
that I don't think is a constitutional program, just like the DUI checkpoints. I'm totally against those.
You know, and there is actually ways that, and I've got some notes on here on this point in the back here, but there is actually a way that you can go in and create your own funds and keep the, you know, local mayors, police, you know, and the feds out of those funds. Mm-hmm. And so we've provided you all of those,
yes,
notes so that you can make sure, mm-hmm, that you have all of the tools at your disposal. And so let's get into, you know, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, I think, before we were rolling camera or rolling film there. But what is a sovereign citizen to you?
Well, when I talk to a sovereign, this is my understanding from whenever I talk to someone that says, I'm a sovereign, and I already understand this, you're not a sovereign citizen, you're either a sovereign or you're not. And I'm always told that a sovereign is someone that is free, and someone that's not is considered a slave or a servant.
Right.
So that's my understanding.
And that's, you know, the word sovereign is such a dirty word as well. You know, it's like the word freedom. You know, mm-hmm, freedom is actually a word to do something that's not licensed or whatever.
Right.
Whereas free is, you're just free.
Right.
You know, so freedom is, oh, well, you know, you can drive as long as you ask mommy and daddy permission. You know, freedom is where you ask mommy and daddy permission to do that thing.
Right.
You have freedom to do it. They've said, okay, yes, you know, Sheriff Paul, you can go out and do that thing. And so, but being free, as long as, you know, the essential premise is that you don't, you know, my freedom ends where your nose begins.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you don't violate those principles on another person, then you remain free. As soon as you affect the person or property of another in a negative way that they have not given you permission for, then you've committed a crime.
Right.
And it's really that simple, you know. So, let's see. So would you consider yourself one of the people who make up the sovereignty?
I wouldn't consider myself a sovereign, and I don't think that I have enough information to really tell you what I believe I am. I've been to, and I'll tell you this, because I do have people that consider themselves sovereigns that work on my campaign, and believe it or not, some people in law enforcement, they confuse the word sovereign with terrorist.
And I'm that's actually intentional, is it not?
Yeah.
Is the federal government sending out notices to PDs and sheriff's departments saying that sovereigns are terrorists?
And the people that I've met that said they were sovereign, they just want freedom. They want, but this is I think where the federal government has a problem. They want the federal government out of their business. And I think the federal government takes, they don't like that.
Well, the federal government, though, is overstepping their jurisdiction of 10 miles.
Right.
And so they have no jurisdiction or authority outside of that 10 miles without sending their code enforcement people after us.
Right.
So let's get into another subject here, and then we'll get back to this idea of code enforcement and all of this. But what about corporate crime in San Bernardino County?
Now, and again, if you're talking about a corporation or you're talking about a government corporation, I'm not, which one are you talking
well,
about?
And that, well, interestingly, that's a very gray line there, because, that most of the cities and states and counties and all are all traded on Wall Street and Dun and Bradstreet and all of this stuff, as are the prisons and everything else. So the prisons and all are for-profit organizations, so all of this can all fall under corporate crime.
And you know what? Corporate crime, I have no problem enforcing the law against a corporation. I have no loyalty to a corporation, if you know what I mean.
Right. What if the law that you're expected to enforce offends your ideas of right and wrong?
Well, if it offends my ideas of right and wrong, that's not, that's not going to deter me. It's if I feel it if it goes against what I feel the Constitution, that's where I would make a determination.
Now, what about something like a mortgage where they're kicking an old lady out on the street? And would you enforce that? Because this is clearly corporations helping corporations extort money.
If it's extortion, I would definitely I would go after whoever's extorting the money. Now, if it's you're not paying your bills, if you bought property and you're not paying your bills, and it's part of my job for civil process is to serve someone with that. But I would want to investigate to make sure that everything was done right, and we're not just throwing someone out.
And that's the thing with these mortgages and all of this, because there's the banks love to play a lot of tricks, and they'll actually when they resell these loans and whatnot, these titles, the title, when they give it to the next bank, it's marked as paid in full.
Right.
Okay, so that title is actually a payment.
Right.
So then nobody has lost. And so if it's a victimless crime, so-called, there's no victim, then, and, we have to show that there is a victim, that there was intentionality, et cetera, for there to have been a crime. So, in a lot of cases like this, there are neither.
Right. Well, my thing was, and this was a thing, because in San Bernardino County a few years ago, we had a lot of people being evicted from their houses, thrown out. And we had a lot of stuff going on here. So one thing that I want to do is I've got some friends of mine that really believe that there are a lot of people thrown out of their house illegally. We want to make sure that we have some professionals that can look at this paperwork and make sure that everything is right. And if it's not, then we can actually turn around and hopefully go after the corporations that are illegally trying to throw someone out, because I talked to some mortgage bankers and some people that believe everything's not as it seems. And I said, what I would like to do is bring people like that on board. You've got cops that investigate crime, but when they start looking at stuff like that, sometimes it's not.
Well, boy, do I have somebody for you on all of that.
Yeah.
And in fact, he's the one that did the research for a lot of the notes in this that I gave you. His name's Clint Richardson, and he's exposed quite a lot of the CAFR information. He's the one that, in 40 minutes to an hour last night, had discovered already, $3 billion that San Bernardino had hidden. And, I had mentioned to you that a couple of years ago, we did an investigation on Rim of the World School District, and he had found $40 million that the school district had hidden in funds up there while they were telling the people up there that the school district was broke, and then demanding people bring in pens and pencils and paper and all of this stuff, and they were saying that they were going to close down the buses and all of this, and then magically, of course, our video was only attacked, but magically, a couple of weeks after the video was released, suddenly all the money was found that they needed to run those things.
Wow. That's amazing.
So, there's a lot of this stuff going on, and what they've done is they've really legalized a lot of their own fraud. You know, it's not really proper to say legal or illegal. It's organized crime. Okay, and because you get organized criminals in positions of politics, then they can write laws to make their criminal activity legal. So then this creates a whole other issue. You know, it's like, okay, well, is this lady doing what's lawful, etc.? Well, are these politicians? And so this is why getting into natural law and getting out of this code enforcement can be, so important. You know, because, well, let me ask you this. Are you going to, if you are going to enforce a law that you believe to be wrong, how can you challenge the law before the people to see if it's right or wrong?
Well, basically, I would. The only laws that I would enforce, as long as I believe they're constitutional. So that's when you say right and wrong. I don't look at it as right and wrong. I have to look at it because I think, as a sheriff, I have the opportunity. And people say, how are you going to do that? Look at what they did in Los Angeles. They decided they were going to tow cars, okay, for certain people. So they put out a special order. Well, if I don't want to do certain things, I'm going to put out a special order. So it's not going to be that I'm going to do something that I feel is not right, because I'm not going to do that. It's going to be based on what I believe the Constitution says.
And you're prepared to do that for all city code enforcement officers as well.
Yeah, I have a big problem with city code enforcement.
And technically, those code enforcement officers that are called police officers, they're under your control, and the police chief is under you, not the other way around.
Well, I'm not sure how that works, but I do know that.
We do, actually. And we know that they do it based on basically a simple trick where they get consent from the sheriff, essentially, to even operate as code enforcement officers.
Okay.
You know, so we can actually lay all of that out for you, so that you're clear on how that works. So let me ask you, do you believe in the infallibility of the court? Do you have to do what the court says and then rescind it, or is it the other way around?
I believe if a court gives me a lawful order, then I do have to
If your consciousness tells you that something is bad that the court has told you to do, then how would you have it tested for lawfulness?
I take it to a jury.
Okay.
A jury.
And another thing that you can do is also support someone who has been injured by that very law and be a witness for them as well.
Right.
And so then you can have wrongful laws overturned. But would you uphold the right of a jury to determine the lawfulness of a law?
Yes, exactly. That's
right.
Exactly what I would, yes.
What good is a jury if the executive of the court won't uphold their decisions?
That's a good question, yeah.
All right, so would you be willing to deputize any willing and able person who are not necessarily state employees?
Yes. In fact, and you can do that.
And you already said this, actually.
Yes.
But, and then here's another good one. Would you consider deputizing someone like me so that we can do ride-alongs and make sure that the police or the code enforcement officers are doing their rightful duty, and which would, of course, obviously give total access to prisoners, the entirety of the police, as a volunteer deputy with full protection of the sheriff?
Yes.
And that's a very simple cut and dry yes right there. Let's see here. Okay, so back to the posse and the militia. What do you want to say about that? You know, we mentioned that we would come back to that issue earlier.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. You know, I believe in a Second Amendment. And I believe, you know, in the right to carry and, you know, and that the Second Amendment was set up to help defend the people from the tyranny of the federal government. I believe that. But I believe that the militia is also set up for that. And so when I started getting phone calls from a few people that actually have militias here, I thought, you know, and I've talked to groups that call themselves, they want to be posses. That needs to all be brought under the sheriff so that when we have times of problems, if we have something going on here and the federal government feels they need to come in, I can tell them no, and I have the people. Because if you don't have the people, then you have a problem.
You have high noon.
Yeah. So you know, and the thing is, you know, the federal government doesn't want to get in to a problem with a local sheriff if he has the people standing behind him. And I think that if people understand that and understand the freedom they can have in their county by having a constitutional sheriff,
a lawful sheriff.
Yes, I think that you know. It's going to be a beautiful thing.
I would agree with you on that. So when you say that you support the Constitution, what do you mean by that?
I mean that I want, as the sheriff, to uphold the Constitution and defend the rights of the people. To me, that works together.
Now, you know, sometimes, and I'll give you some examples here in a second, but sometimes that isn't always so, because essentially what the Constitution lays out are privileges.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, so does that include upholding the people's natural rights to be free, considering the Constitution sometimes impends on those rights itself?
Well, you know, that is a good question. I think that it would have to be looked at, and I would, you know, you would have to give me particular incidents, you know, or whatever you're talking about, because it's such a general statement. You know, it's just like the amendments to the Constitution. Some people feel that some of those are restrictive.
Yeah, what about quote unquote rights that the Constitution so called provides that are actually forced on the people?
Right.
You know, and there are some of those, and in fact, I should have written a couple examples down, I didn't include in my notes. So, what evidence is there that the Constitution and laws of the state apply to me just because I'm physically located in California?
Repeat that again.
What evidence is there that the Constitution and laws of the states apply to me just because I'm physically located in California?
I believe because our country was founded on the Constitution, and you live in the United States, or you live in America.
Okay, well,
and I know there's I can't remember. I'm trying to, because I've been
just plead the fifth on that one.
I've been to some of these classes because some people said, hey, you need to go to this class to know about driving, and you need to go to this class. So, and then someone says, oh, we're not this because that's the corporation, we're this. So,
you know, the issue is whenever you see a contradiction in something, there's an error or a lie.
Yes.
Okay. And so, you know, it's not like the quantum physics, you know, delusion that they want to sell us, where you can have, you know, 11 or 12 contradictions in the same place at the same time and somehow not live in Roger Rabbit land. But, you know, these issues of these laws and everything are very particular because it's all done by consent, essentially. The state is, again, a corporation. The county is a corporation. The city is a corporation. Now, with the sheriff, it's a little bit different because the sheriff is making a contract with the people. Whereas these corporations, the most of the laws actually, believe this or not, only apply to their own employees. So if you have an officer of a corporation, McDonald's, let's say, the bylaws and guidelines of McDonald's only apply to their employees. McDonald's can't kick in your front door and do raids and stuff like that. But what they've done is they've actually tricked the sheriff, who's the real supreme law of the land, to give the police this authority to then go and act like McDonald's and kick in your door and do these things that they don't really have the right to do. So they actually have to trick the sheriff to get that authority to go into any of this code enforcement that they do at all. But will you enforce or recognize under color of law statutes that a policeman has no power than the average person?
Yes, I believe that, because you have the same right to make an arrest as I do.
And that's, in fact, under U.S. Title 18, Section 242. Whoever under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured by the protection of the Constitution of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. And if bodily injury results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of dangerous weapons, explosions, explosives, or fire, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. And if death results from the acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include kidnapping, such as my friend's child. And by the way, on that point, just hold that thought for a second. That 12-year-old is going to be running for sheriff of Riverside County.
Wow.
Because under the law, the child is considered an adult, but yet they won't allow the child any rights and have violated his rights and have, you know, did a gun raid on him, and Sheriff Stanley didn't stand up for the child's rights, so the child is running for sheriff against Stanley.
Oh, wow.
So let's not let that happen. So anyway, including kidnapping or an attempt to kidnap, aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to kill, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any terms of years for life or both, or may be sentenced to death. And of course, this all covers all of the NSA, CIA, and all spy and intelligence organizations. They all fall under the violation of the color of law in Title 18, Subsection 242. So, you know, in this statement, I'm, you know, we're actually, just by even reading that, we're putting them on notice. And so once you are recognized as the rightful sheriff, to protect yourself and your duty, will you uphold the importance of the other most important office of this land, known as San Bernardino, who is the court clerk?
Yes.
And, you know, and which, you know, of course, by protecting her or him, you protect yourself.
Right.
Because, you know, you two are become the two basically supreme law officials that the people are looking to. And so those two positions, the sheriff always has to protect the court clerk, and any authority that the sheriff has comes from the court clerk as well and from the people. So it's a very finite little marriage there. What do you think about, let's get into this. You already said this earlier. Let's get into code enforcement.
Yes. Now, when you said code enforcement, you're talking about state law, am I correct?
Well,
I'm talking about local code enforcement is what I was talking about.
Well, I suppose there's a whole lot of gray area in all of the above, county, state, city, you know, the police and their code enforcement.
I have a problem with, like, the local code enforcement, the people that come out and tell you, you know, you have to cut your grass, you have to do certain things in your yard, and first of all, I'm not even sure where they get their authority to do anything.
They have none.
You know, and I think that it's just a money-making operation, and I totally have a big problem with that. So the local code enforcement, the cities are going to want to run those, and they're going to want them to, you know, make money. But my thing is, if you are... And it's just from my own understanding, you know, you guys would probably have a whole different take on it.
Well, we would be able to provide you the exact laws is the issue of how they usurp those police to then,
My thing would be is if you're trespassing on someone's land and they've asked you to leave or it's posted and, you know, or you've been in their backyard, we'll arrest you for trespassing. If you're a code enforcement officer doing this, and I think it would only take a couple times that would stop a lot of that.
Right.
And I would like to talk to every city council in this city that falls under my jurisdiction and let them know if this happens. Because one of the biggest things that's running businesses out of California is not the taxation, it's overregulation.
Right.
And the code enforcement is that arm that helps this regulation exist. And I've seen it in action, and I've seen people suffer for petty regulatory things that just end up driving people's, you know, drive them into the ground. And I think as a sheriff, to work with small businesses and try to make this place a better place to live and work with the people, that's part of my job.
One of the problems of going to court is that the maxims of law have become secondary to statutory code law. Have you studied maxims of law?
No.
Would you be willing to?
Yeah.
What is an unlawful warrant?
To me, an unlawful warrant would be one that was basically issued from Wise.
It's also a judge, when he issues a warrant, he's supposed to issue it to a specific officer, mm-hmm. and not open to any officer who's available at that time. So that is also an unlawful warrant.
Okay.
And how do you feel about exercising unlawful warrants?
Well, I wouldn't want to exercise an unlawful warrant.
And would you arrest a police officer if he acts unlawfully?
Yes.
And mayor?
Oh, yes.
And of course, that's why they're keeping you out.
And a board of supervisor.
Yeah. That's why they're keeping you out. That's why you're a sheriff in exile. So, let's see. Are you willing to clean house?
Absolutely.
What is the single most important concept that you would like people to take away from this interview?
For me, it's about liberty and it's about freedom. My the way I look at it might be different the way you're looking at it, but I truly believe that somewhere in the middle we meet. And I think that being able to know that you're going to have someone that is defending the rights of the people and making sure that tyranny's not raining down on you. Again, it might be a different than the way you're looking
at it. Well, the point is that you and I would be able to sit down at the table, look at all the documentation, go over the points one by one, and say, these are the facts. Mm-hmm. You know, here's what, you know, what do we need to do here?
Yes. So, you know, I want to let people know that I want to defend your rights and uphold the Constitution. If you walk away with anything else, that's one of the reasons I'm running for sheriff, and that's what I want to do as sheriff.
All right. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you.